ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley
and Tim Coker.
We're here to talk nerdy with you. I'm telling you, this is going to be a good show. I don't know why, because we have nothing planned. We're just kind of winging it, but it's going to be a good show, right, guys?
I think it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, all right. So let's see. What do we got to talk about nerdy wise? Well, actually, Eric, we never did get your feedback on Indie PopCon because you claim to be busy and all that stuff. So you went. How long did you stay at Indie PopCon? One day or 2 days?
Two. I came in early on Saturday morning and stayed and went back on Sunday. And me and your friend, the Joker,
Brady,
yeah, yep. Hung out. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, there were a lot more different cosplayers there on Sunday than were on Saturday.
Oh,
it's interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't have expected that.
But, we talked about this before while we were still at the con. It was in, I filled out the survey afterwards that you hadn't wanted me to fill out.
Yeah.
Compared to last year, I have to definitely say I preferred last year. And I guess comparatively, you could say it was a little more old school
last year.
Yeah. Where the focus was on TV, movies, comic books, and more traditional geek nerdery stuff that is from our generation. Whereas this year, it's like very, very, very heavily slanted towards, YouTube and new media and that's not the shocking thing. The shocking thing is that the guys who made those decisions were, as far as like popularity and knowing their audience, were 100% right. I mean, the place was filled with people who were these fans of these YouTube names that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
They filled the room. They had to they had to cut off people walking into the main room, which was huge already.
And that was the main entrance to the whole con too.
I know. That was the other weird thing. Cause obviously they didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And it was like that for both of their showings. And you could hear the audience roaring all over the con. And it just, my jaw was on the floor. I was like, how is it possible that this many people are this into these people that I've never even heard of? I had to question my nerd credentials. It was a scary moment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know
We're
what you mean.
We're old.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. When we first got in there, Isaac had a VIP pass. And with a VIP pass, you get to jump in line. Okay. With the VIP pass, he still would have had to wait 4 hours in line for these guys.
Wow.
And they had,
crazy.
They had you waited to get a wristband. And with that wristband, then you went and stood in line for 6 hours to get the autographs from the YouTubers.
Holy
Isaac would have still had to wait 4 hours. So, wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then, like you said, they had to close down that main hall, and that was the main entrance. They had to create a new entrance into the PopCon at last minute's notice when they started their panel. So, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, I love
the idea of creating a new entrance. It makes me think of, they had to explode a wall or something to allow the mod to come through.
Yeah.
Galaxy Quest style, the rocket or the ship comes in. Anyway.
Well, that's kind of how it happened. Well, they had extra doors, so.
Yeah, there were doors all they just had to set up a makeshift table to check people in or whatever. But
yeah, you're right. It was overwhelmingly, humbling, actually, for us old timers.
Yeah, but it was, I got to meet and have my picture taken with Captain Adama. I mean, I was a fan of the man before even Battlestar Galactica, mostly for his role in Blade Runner, which I wasn't alone in. And he considers that one of his greatest roles. And that makes me very happy that he considers Gaff to be one of his greatest roles, because most other actors would consider that a throwaway role. But so many fans, you know, pick up on what he does with that character in the small time he's on screen. And he's very aware of that, you know, and so I was really happy that that's like a feather in his cap.
Did you ask him to fold some origami for you?
No, and I was going to go back up and talk to him, but I was just, I actually, for the first time that I've done one of these things, I actually got a little bit of fan fright, and I'm like, I don't know what to say to him. I'm like, you know, I was really kind of nerded out. It was an interesting experience. But yeah, super nice guy, and just like very upfront. His Q&A was really, you know how you see these Q&As with actors that they don't want to say anything negative about any of their past work or any of their past coworkers, because, you know, they don't want to jeopardize their chance of getting a job, which isn't necessarily unwise.
Right.
But then you get these people like Almost that gets up there and just, he had a bad time on a production, or he had an argument or disagreement with someone. He has no problems talking about it. Oh. So it was kind of cool.
See, I didn't get sit on his panel. I thought, you know, actually, I think when his panel started, I was talking to one of the comic artists that I ran.
You were doing an interview.
Well, yeah. I think at that time it was Gavin Smith, maybe, with the Accelerators comic. And I was like, well, you know, all right. See, and that's the thing. I really don't attend panels very much when I go to any con. I may be missing out on a lot of stuff when I don't do that.
I've gone to a couple of them, and I thought that they were worthwhile. I mean, there's always going to be those people standing up and asking the most inane questions.
Oh, yeah.
Like Chris Farley's character on Saturday Night Live with Paul McCartney. He's like, you remember when you were in that band with John Lennon? That was cool.
It was awesome.
And, you know, I kind of felt that way when I went and talked to Zach Galligan. I just basically, I wanted to get my picture, and I wanted to get Zach Galligan's autograph, you know, the guy from Gremlins. And I kind of felt, because I really went up there, I just wanted that, you know, and I didn't really have any questions or anything to say. I just kind of wanted my picture with him, because I had a stuffed gizmo with me as well. And so I had him hold that while we were taking the picture. But it was just one of those things. Is like, I didn't know what to say to him. I'm like, remember that movie you did? I liked it. You know? And I couldn't think of anything else to say.
It's funny, because you get so excited to go up and have a moment and communicate with this person who's given, you know, their work, even if it's just what the work they did for the 3 months they were working on that movie.
Right.
That work has given you pleasure for your whole life. But how do you communicate that in a way that they haven't heard before?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know? And how do you not then stress out over just being another goofball coming up and saying, yeah, that movie, I really, you know? And sometimes if I'm waiting in line, I'll actually like sit there and try to think, okay, what can I say? Is there anything?
Yeah.
Like, is there any personal moment that I can connect this to that I can share with him and say, you know, I was watching that movie with my, you know, friend such and such on this one night, and I always remember that, whatever. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I always feel like those kinds of help a little bit, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And that, you know, and that's the thing. I just couldn't think of anything with him. It was like, well, you know, during the early 80s, hey, I that was one of the movies that was fun to watch, you know. Plus, I was like, okay.
Yeah, if I had just finished watching Blade Runner or an episode of Battlestar Galactica, I'm sure there would have been an interesting question that would have come out of that. But I haven't watched either of those in a little while now, so
yeah.
You know, nothing came to mind. But I also got to meet Lloyd Kaufman. That was the other
that
highlight.
That was cool, wasn't it? Actually, you were responsible for me getting that interview with him, because you told me that he was up there just talking to people, and holy cow, you were absolutely right. Tell us first about your experience with Lloyd.
Well, I mean, I've been watching trauma films, God, for back when there was only VHS, and it was, you know, when you saw a trauma film, it was just like you were seeing something you weren't going to see anywhere else. I mean, you could see TNA and violence and over the top gore in other movies, but not done with the same, just anarchistic, is that the right word?
It might be.
Glee. Sure. That the man throws into his stuff. And I mean, he is the quintessential self-made, self-produced, self-distributed movie mogul, independent movie mogul. He was independent before there was independent. He's been making movies since I think his first movie was like in the late 70s. So he's been around for so long. And, you know, and he made, you know, built this company based on the Toxic Avenger. And, mm-hmm. And I mean, I just had such respect for him. And I went to his panel and I actually compared him to basically the punt, the, oh yeah, yeah. I said he was the Sid Vicious of independent film filmmaking, which he liked, but that's kind of the way I see him, you know? And, so he was a big inspiration for me when I, back when I had dreams of making films, I was like, well, if he could do it, I could do it. You know, he spent $10 making this movie.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the thing about him is that he was so personable too. That took me by surprise, you know? Cause you said, you know, he's just up there at his booth, you know, just go up there and talk to him. I'm sure he'll do the interview. Cause you know, you have, as press, we had to kind of arrange the interviews and, I went up there and, like you said, his talk. I had to wait for him though because he had fans. He was just sitting there talking, just signing autographs. And what it was
for
during
free,
the
might I add.
And that's the thing at Indie PopCon this year, they had these little trading cards that you can go to different stations and collect. If you can get all of them, you know. Anyway, he had his own, you know, Lloyd Kaufman trading card, and he was signing those. They were just giving those out for free. He wasn't charging anything for his autograph, and he was talking to people. And if they bought something, he'd sign it. And you know, actually, it brings me. You said something about the, you know, the TNA and all that stuff that he puts in the movies. When I interviewed him, he kept introducing Tremelia, that the female assistant, I guess.
Yeah, she's the Tromettes are what they're called.
Yeah, and he referred to her as Tremelia. And anyway, he asked what she liked best about his movies, and she said one line that grabbed me, and it's like, you know, that is so correct about every one of those freaking movies. And she said, "I love the squishins." You know, basically not just the gore, but the squishins, the ooey gooey stuff. And it's like, that's a cool way to put that.
Right on.
So, but yeah, he was just right there and talking to people, anybody. So, and signing for free.
I mean, he is the ultimate self-promoter. And you know, I don't know how sincere he was, but he kept dropping, you know, at the Q&A and while we were talking to him, he would drop these things like Troma was going broke and they, you know, and really, really trying to get people to sign up for the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I felt for the guy. I hope that there's that he's not going to be completely sincere about that. I would hate for Troma to fold after all these years.
But, all right. Well, he's got a whole Kickstarter campaign going.
Yeah, it's what's the movie? I forgot. He told me about it, and I forgot the name of it. It's not Surf Nazis Must Die. Was it Class of Nukem High?
Yeah, Nukem High 2 or something like
Nukem
that.
Nukem High 2, or something like that. Yeah.
So
yeah. He's great.
I don't know, the whole Indie PopCon feel this year. Like you said, it was a younger maybe audience for it, but they nailed it because they had 80% increase in ticket sales.
Well, I read when I filled out the survey, they said something in there about they wanted to cater this to the young creative set who was looking to, you know, start a blog or a podcast or a video or a video blog or, you know, what these guys are doing that, you know, we're filling the room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of people doing that. And I'm very curious about it. I don't know if I necessarily want to devote the time to sit down and research it, but the idea that a lot of people are making money doing shows on YouTube, which kind of blows my mind.
Well, maybe we should be a video-based podcast, guys. What do you think?
Maybe we should think about that. I don't know, but once I get a load of this mug, we may lose people.
I know, right? It would go from let's just say we would up the horror content.
The squishins.
The squishins.
It was still fun. I got to meet Flash Gordon.
Oh, my God.
Sam Jones. You know, that was so cool. And he was a pretty
cool
guy, too.
Pretty much like he used to.
Yeah, that's weird. He's older, but he doesn't look it. Well, he's an ex-Marine. And Marines always kind of stay in shape throughout their lives from my experience, anyway. So that might be part of it. Oh, Malcolm Goodwin, the cop from iZombie. And,
God, I've got to watch that show.
I know. I've got him recorded.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Also from Breakout Kings, if you guys are a fan of that. Talked to him, and he was a really cool guy. It was funny because last year I'd go up to meet, you know, the celebrities and ask for an interview, and they're like, well, you know, they'd have some excuse why I should wait or whatever. And I went up to him, and he's like, heck yeah, what do you got to talk about? I was like, okay, cool. He gave me a little heads up. Hopefully when they release iZombie on DVD or Blu-ray, they'll have a outtakes section. He says, if they do, you're going to laugh. He goes, there's some great stuff on the outtakes. I'm like, okay.
Awesome.
So hopefully they will have that soon. Yeah, Tim Coker, you need to get on that. And Eric, I don't know, you've got it recorded. You need to just start watching it. It's actually worthwhile. And it's, I don't know how to put iZombie, where any category. It's not your typical zombie. And it's kind of, it's more like a cop show with a little supernatural feel to it.
That's what I've heard it described as, which sounds a little intriguing. So I'm curious. I will probably check it out at some point, but so buried under stuff to watch as it is.
I know, right? It's a great time to be a nerd.
Yeah. Actually, did you guys want to talk about Terminator Genisys? I know you saw it, Gil. Did you see it, Tim?
Yeah, no. No. No, that is the opposite of the kind of movie that I want to go see. I mean, like, I get a little bit of my anguished cry of being sick of franchises, of mm-hmm. franchise overload on Facebook recently. And I could go into it, but you know, Terminator Genisys was not a movie I was interested in at all. And from what I've heard, I think that my instincts were probably correct.
Yeah. Well, Isaac and I did a review on one of the previous podcasts, and basically it came out to you get past the idiocy of the plot and you just watch the explosions, then you got a nice summer movie. You just watch explosions and special effects, and that's it.
It is utterly forgettable, other than a couple of the set pieces that, you know, that you were basically already saw 100 times in the trailer.
Right.
And I was really excited to see it. I really was. The trailers got me pumped until they did the second trailer, where they spoiled half the movie, really. They should have kept that, you know, under wraps until after the movie had opened. but, you know, that instantly made me realize, like, uh-oh, I think they're going down a really bad path here. Yeah,
really?
Sure enough,
I thought they went down a bad path after Terminator 2.
they did, but the thing is Terminator 3 and Terminator Salvation didn't do anything to disrupt the continuity or the story of 1 and 2. This one does, and that's criminal.
This one just didn't make any sense, period.
Listen, let me, can I be a pain in the ass here?
Do please, so. Please.
What's the appeal of more Terminator movies? What are they going to do that's better than what we already saw? And what is the point when, at this point, the message that we get from Terminator movies is that Skynet is inevitable and will happen regardless, no matter how many times somebody comes back in time to stop it from happening. It doesn't matter because they'll stop that plan and then something else will happen and then they'll come back and keep trying to make Skynet happen, even though they keep stopping Skynet from happening.
Yeah.
Even making one workable sequel to The Terminator was a Hail Mary that I cannot believe they pulled off. And I'm so glad they did. But with that said, I just think it's diminishing returns. And okay, yeah, I never watched the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Okay, you know what? I'll tell you what. I've only seen one thing after Terminator 2, and that was the one with Bruce Wayne in it, Christian Bale.
Yeah, that was something.
Which was, you know, and this is a term I overuse, but I genuinely apply it to that movie. It was a garbage fire. And that was a movie where it was so bad, you know, even more incompetent than Star Trek Into Darkness, which I know we've all disagreed about. But I mean, I thought that movie, what was that, Terminator Salvation?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but that didn't stop him, you know, and that didn't stop any Terminator fans from going to see the movies. So what I want to know is, why are you guys going? What is it that you want to get out of it? And I don't mean to be so accusing and like, you guys suck. You go to Terminator. I genuinely don't understand what the appeal is of watching the legacy of Terminator continually get watered down a little more and a little more. And this time you've got horrible old Schwarzenegger in it. And I don't see the appeal. I don't know.
Well,
so,
I can
that's
tell you,
all.
I can answer that question for you. And it's really, and it was a hope for me. It was a hope that they could actually turn it around and do something with it. Because they had the chance. They could have. And that's what I was going into it, hoping that, you know, okay, yeah, okay. That basically, I knew going into it that it was pretty much just an excuse for Arnold Schwarzenegger to get in there and re-quote those old lines. And that's what he did, too. I knew that going in, but I kept thinking, you know, there was a hope somewhere in the back. It's like, okay, they're going to turn this around. They're going to tie up all these timelines, and they're going to make it make sense. But they just made it worse. So it's like that hope was with me. That's why I went. And after that,
okay.
I was like, oh, no, they didn't. Gosh.
Well, now, to answer your question, your first question, if I could think of something that would make Terminator new and original and make it relevant again, I'd be working in Hollywood for a lot of money.
Yeah.
But just because I can't do it doesn't mean that I think that there's someone out there who can't do that. And here's the thing, you talked about the second one being a Hail Mary. I agree with you 100%. But that's the exception that kind of makes the rule, or that gives, that is the example of why I keep holding out hope that someone will make another worthwhile sequel. It is possible to happen, however unlikely, I admit that. But Aliens was another thing. I mean, Alien is such a self-contained film. Now, if you didn't know anything about there being any other sequels, and you heard that someone was making a sequel today to Alien, you would have the same reaction as you did to Terminator and these other films, right, Tim?
Yeah.
But they did it. They pulled it off. They spun it on a without completely bastardizing betraying the original film. They stuck with what was given to them, and they expanded upon it and turned the entire franchise on its ear into something completely different that you would have never gotten from watching that first film. And there's always that possibility of happening, and that's why I can't help myself from being kind of excited about the new Star Wars, because it's not impossible that they could get this franchise back on track. I'm not hoping that this film will outperform 1, 2, or even 3, which the original series, I guess 4, 5, and 6 are the episodes.
Yeah.
But I mean, even with, you know, we'll agree that even the third one is the weakest of the series, and I don't expect it to be anywhere near as good as Return of the Jedi. But if it's even half as good as Return of the Jedi, it'll be better than most of the science fiction and fantasy movies that I go to see, and I'll be perfectly happy to buy it on video when it comes out.
All right.
Yeah, there's that hope that I wouldn't say fandom, because I'm not really a fan of Terminator. I'm not really a fan of Star Wars, but there's a hope that it's like, okay, maybe they can make something better. You know, they got the idea.
A new hope.
Yeah, a new hope. There you go. Or a lost hope, maybe. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But and I guess really I should have known with Terminator, with when Arnold was coming back, I'm like, I saw him in The Expendables 3.
Ugh, I gave up after the first one.
Yeah.
I never saw the other ones. I just saw Expendables 3, so I didn't lose anything. But yeah, the whole thing is just, it's like, you know, it's time to hang it up, dude. Let someone else take the ropes.
Yeah, he really is. He's really hit that swinging air in almost everything he's released. Actually, his first movie that he came out with after his term as governor was actually, I think, the best and the least watched, which was, I can't even remember the name of it now. He played a sheriff in a small border town, and it was like the drug cartel was driving through his town. And it was a horrible memory. It was directed by a famous Korean director whose work I really liked a lot. This was his first American production. But anyway, I can't remember the name of it, but I'm sure everyone listening right now knows exactly what I'm talking about, and you're all shouting it out, and I can't hear you. But anyway, it's worth watching. But
either that, or they're all saying, "Well, there's a reason we don't know it." I don't know. I've never been a Schwarzenegger fan,
but it's entertaining. It's a small film. But
yeah, okay.
Here's the other thing I want to say about the Terminator, and Tim, you'll appreciate this, and this will confirm that you've made the right decision not to watch it. That one thing that you, well, actually, you had many things, many problems with the new Star Trek reboots. But that one thing that bothered me as well about them in the whole nudging in the ribs of, hey, you remember this from the original series? Hey, you remember this from Star Trek Wrath of Khan? Hey, you remember, we're hip. We're right where you are. That kind of thing. There was a whole buttload of that.
That's all that movie was. That's all Terminator
Genesis
was.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
It is. It's all a big nudge in the ribs to say, remember when this happened? Wasn't that cool?
Well, and honestly, to me, that stuff always feels to me like an insincere apology for failing to come up with something with a good reason to actually make the movie and something new to say about the actual property. You know, it's really like, and especially in Star Trek Into Darkness, which, boy, I could talk about how much I hate that movie for weeks. But but it's true. There's something so depressing about how that film completely rejected everything that made Star Trek Star Trek and just created the most generic kind of frat guy science fiction movie imaginable. And then in order to claim that they were making a Star Trek movie after all, they just throw in a bunch of quotes that you're like, oh, I remember that. Okay, well, it must be Star Trek because he said, damn it, Jim, you know? And it's one of the things that really depresses me about... Well, I'm not going to say depresses me, because honestly, with Star Wars, I have been so thoroughly disgusted with like post 1983 Star Wars that I pretty much, you know, my message about Star Wars is there are 3 Star Wars movies and everything else is merch, and I don't collect Star Wars merch anymore, you know. and I really think that that's the truth. You know, Star Wars was something that happened when I was you know what, it was between the ages of, you know, 11 and 15 for me or whatever. And it was great and we all loved it, but I don't need to keep going back and getting a hit from that. That's, you know, for me, I'm into going out and trying to find something different or,
yeah.
And I don't mean to sound, make myself sound like some kind of radical dude, because that is not it. Like, I will chew on the same bone over and over forever, but it'll be the original bone and not like a crappy watered down new version with CGI special effects, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all it is really is I feel like we've got this shambling, desiccated, rambling, or, you know, revenant corpses of all these things that we liked that are being served up with less and less sincerity year after year. And, you know, and it's the same thing with the James Bond series. I really feel like it's just an infomercial for various high-end products that they want to sell. And you know, you get to watch really great CGI and all this stuff and big stunts, but it's completely soulless and devoid of any kind of personality, any kind of risk, any kind of actual human voice. It's really like watching an hour and a half of commercials, you know? And I don't know why. Like, again, I think I've gotten away from just wanting to watch stuff blow up, you know,
right.
Maybe, but I can't think of another reason to want to watch a new James Bond movie at this point, because we've seen the total creative bankruptcy of the people who are doing it.
The new one coming out, Spectre.
Yeah.
That's not looking like a James Bond movie. That's looking like he's gone rogue.
He is going rogue.
Which he does in every movie.
Yeah. He has done, yes. That two out of three movies, he has gone rogue, yes.
That's the Daniel Craig thing, is he's like, this ain't your daddy's James Bond. I'm not doing what I'm told. But the thing is, that's James Bond in every movie. That's the most James Bond. That's the only, like, really James Bond thing there is that James Bond is given one order, and then he's like, I got a better idea.
Yeah.
And he improvises, you know?
Well, I think this one is just one big improvisation.
Okay. So, I don't want to rain on the parade. I hope it's a fun movie and everything, but after Skyfall, I kind of realized that I think I'm done with James Bond.
I actually, to be honest, I was done with James Bond after Moonraker.
Good man.
So that was the last one I ever saw.
That was the end of the Bond golden era. In fact, the Moonraker was the funeral dirge of the series, many have said. But I still get excitement, and I, you know, except for the second one, which is most people will agree is just absolutely a huge mess of dog droppings. But the Casino Royale, I really like, and it's a very different mm-hmm. Bond. And here's the thing. I understand what they're trying to do, that Bond, you know, the Bond that we know and love is, you know, a bit of a racist, definitely a sexist. There's a lot of ideas built into that character that don't really fly now, but their answer was to do a complete overhaul and put James Bond in the real world. Wrong. Mm-hmm. That's not why we watch James Bond. We don't want to see the real world intrude on a James Bond movie. James Bond has his own world where certain things are true, and the bad guys all have really bizarre tastes in art and architecture and clothing, and they all have they're instantly identifiable as the bad guy. There's none of this murkiness, you know, and I miss that. And I think that maybe we're ready for a shift to go back to that. But I think that it was wrong of them to completely take James Bond and put him in the real world. And that's kind of ties in with our whole argument against the, you know, DC movies.
Yeah.
Is that they try to make it too realistic, too much in the real world. That's not what they were never intended to be in the real world. You know, they've always been fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think it's wrong to try to sell that off. Just to say, oh, well, you know, this is for big people to watch because it happens in the real world, you know. But anyway, that's well-worn territory we've all gone over.
Yeah, it's a pretty juvenile idea of what real is, for sure. And I that to me is kind of my main issue with it, with the Bond series, is that, like, I actually really liked Casino Royale until the ending where, you know, then suddenly he shows up with the tuxedo and the giant gun and he's like, Bond, James Bond. And it's like, hey, if you enjoyed this really fresh new take on James Bond, I hope you're happy for a bunch of really poorly differentiated crap coming up afterwards. You know, we're hitting the reset button now and it's just the same. And I feel like really, you know, it's got a little bit of a facelift. It's more, you know, kind of viscerally exciting, and it's got the kind of modern parkour and stuff like that. But there's no there. You know what I mean? This is not being made by anybody with any artistry, with any kind of point of view. There's nothing surprising about it. It's just it's like it was made by computers, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that. I don't want to see a safe option on James Bond. I want them to make something surprising. And, you know, I don't know. That's James Bond hasn't been surprising since Dr. No, really. But I just feel like, I don't know. I guess that's what it is.
I would disagree with Bond not being surprising since Dr. No. I mean, I think
I guess that was a dumb thing to say.
There's quite a few good surprises still, you know, throughout that series, up until, like I said, the death knell of the series. But here's the thing: one of the things that people complained about, that, you know, when it shifted into the Roger Moore era, there became he relied too heavily on gadgets. Everyone pretty much can agree that they overdid the gadgets and the special features on the Aston Martin. You know, a little bit is fine, but when you go overboard, you go into the air, and I've actually seen long discussions of people talking about, is James Bond science fiction? And, you know, there's a case to be made for it, because there's so much, you know, science fiction peppered throughout the series. But then there are shows that there are movies like the one with the invisible car. That was so horrendous.
I'd given up by that point, so I never saw that one.
Okay, that was just absolutely horrendous. You know, and there's been some other things where they just, you know, well, Moonraker, I mean, that's not even good science fiction. but the thing that I miss the most is not the gadgetry, but the set designs. I mean, like Dr. No and Goldfinger, those sets were freaking amazing. They were so much a part of the personality of that series. And I've not seen anything even close to that in the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah, if you look at if you look at You Only Live Twice, right? Is that the one where in Japan with the volcano, the big specter base in the volcano?
Yes. Love that.
Like that's so awesome. That is a film that, for all of its problems, and I'll tell you, cousin man, You Only Live Twice has problems, but that movie was made with joy. You know, there is a real inspiration going on with that crazy bass and all the stuff going like, you know, that, you know, if you compare it to kind of the more run of the mill Bond movie where it's just more of the same, you know, I feel like that's really inspired. And that's what's missing is inspiration, other than wanting to do kind of, you know, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if a train comes crashing through right here because somehow Javier Bardem knew that there would be a train there exactly at that time where he happened to put that bomb where Bond happened to be. You know, and it's, you know, it's the Kurtzman and Orsi school of just putting post-it notes on the wall and then coming up with connective tissue so that the stuff they want to see on screen happens. But I don't know. I'm repeating myself. I just I really feel like the Bond movies make me depressed.
Well, you know,
the end.
Well, the only thing is, I guess you could really say the only franchise of films that are any success would be the Marvel franchise of films.
Well, and that's because, you know, it hasn't been beaten into the ground for us yet.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a few, you know, we've actually had quite a few of the Marvel films, but they've had new ideas in each episode or each movie.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, okay, they're actually, you know, they're staying true to the original material as well, somewhat anyway. So you know, I think franchises basically are kind of the bane of the movie world, you know, because
they are the lifeblood of the studios.
Exactly. And that's the problem. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Well, we'll do a sequel. I mean, look just simple Friday the 13th. The first movie, I loved it. The sequels were rather silly. You know?
You didn't like the second one, but that was the first one that had Jason in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't seem to me.
Yeah.
The first
one. Yeah. Well, because you knew what to expect by then, because you had not only Friday the 13th, but also Halloween, and so the formula was kind of already ingrained by then.
But the first one is like, you didn't know what was happening until even the very end. It's like, what?
Yeah.
But then after that, sequels just totally just made it a franchise where, hey, we got toys now. I don't know. But hopefully Marvel will keep doing it, though, because Ant-Man is awesome.
You know, it is.
And too bad Eric hasn't seen it, because I just so badly want to give some spoilers or talk about that movie.
You guys can talk about just trying to avoid the spoilers, because I am going to go probably tomorrow to see it. I just have not been able to fit it in my schedule.
Well, actually, to be honest, I would love for it to be a complete surprise to you, because when I went into that movie to see Ant-Man, for me, it was like a, meh, it's a Marvel movie, I'll go see it. I walked out of there saying, wow, that was a Marvel movie. You know, it was it blew me away because I didn't really expect much out of it, I guess, but it had its moments. It stayed within the Marvel universe. And
well, I think most nerds got their worlds rocked the original director, Edgar Wright walked away.
Yeah.
Because I can't help but still think what kind of an Ant-Man movie, what kind of a Marvel movie period that man would make.
Well, his names are all over the credits at the end of the movie, so they stuck with a lot of his info.
Oh, good. That's encouraging.
Whenever I saw the end credits and the Edgar Wright is like three or four times listed, you know, I'm like, well, it sounds like they kept a lot of his original material if they're going to credit him that much.
Someday there's going to be a fascinating book or documentary about what all happened on that movie and what the evolution of it was. And I will, you know, put me down for a copy because I want to know. What I'll say about the movie is I think that there's a lot of signs of Edgar Wright in it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of you can see that there's a lot of inspiration in the humor and some of the characterization and stuff. I didn't like it as much as Gil. I liked it. I think I need to see it again because through an entertaining story that is kind of not really relevant, I ended up kind of half drunk when I sat down to start the movie. And so it wasn't the best baseline for me to really evaluate it for a cogent opinion for all of you. But what I'll say is that I think this movie is significantly less inspired than some of the other Marvel movies. Oh, yeah. And I would say keep your expectations lower, Eric, because it has a lot of the charm and fun of like Guardians, for instance.
Yeah.
And Guardians for me is like the masterclass on how you do the fun of a Marvel movie. And it was such a shock because none of us knew what to expect. And there is so much just left field stuff. And Chris Pratt is such a wild card in the movie. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're not reviewing that. But what I'm saying is that this movie doesn't quite have that level of inspiration. It doesn't have the level of gamble that Guardians had. It feels much safer and kind of more conventionally Hollywood than any of the other Marvel movies that I can think of in that, you know, it's a heist movie. And he has kind of this... Paul Rudd has this posse of three kind of colorful ethnic stereotype characters.
Very much stereotype, but they're fun.
You know, but they are really fun. They're acted with a lot of gusto and they sell it, you know, and it's great. And I don't hate those guys and I'm not going to fold my arms and get all SJW and, you know, oh, this is an occasion for me to be humorless. But it's, you know, a lot of it feels like normal movie where I think the thing about Marvel that's been great is they so often take what I'm expecting and turn it upside down or give me something that I was not expecting at all. And to me, this movie feels much more expected, certainly than anything you would have thought you'd get from Edgar Wright. And so I can't help but wonder what kind of eccentricities were sanded down in the making, you know, of the movie. But that said, it's a fun movie. It's charming. I think Paul Rudd does a good job. You know, he's no Chris Pratt, but nobody else is. But what I'll say is the super action in the movie, and this is job one of any superhero movie, is super action should knock your socks off.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the one saving grace of the otherwise utterly crapulent Man of Steel is that the super action is badass, you know, and really hand-to-hand super fist fight stuff like you've never seen. This movie, the shrinky dink action is right on the money. It's so good. And that part of it is great. There are a lot of ways in which I think the movie could have been a lot better. And the charms that the movie has weren't enough to keep me afterwards from playing in my mind the movie I wish it had been. And that is unusual for a Marvel movie. So I recommend it, but with reservations.
Let me ask you this. From the trailers that I saw, the one element that I loved the most, and I think most fans were the same way, was the battle on the toy train set. You know, in the I don't know if the cutting is the same in the film as it is in the trailer, but it looks very funny and looks exciting at the same time. Is there you said that there were elements that you wish there were more of. Is that one of those elements, or is there a lot of that kind of sense of humor?
There's plenty of very entertaining action in the movie, and with a lot of wit, you know. And I think that Yeah, no, I think that the action in the movie is very satisfying. I don't think that there's too little of that. Honestly, the thing that I think that there's too little of in the movie is Evangeline Lilly being the Wasp.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that the movie really, really, really needed her. Okay, I'm going to sound like one of those horrible people that acts like he knows how to make movies and doesn't. But the movie really, really needed her in the third act to show up in the Wasp outfit and save Paul Rudd's bacon and turn the tide. And this is Paul Rudd's superhero show all the way. And that's fine, I guess, but it would have been a better movie because she spends the entire movie showing a lot of potential to be awesome. And they really aren't kidding when they say you're not getting her as the Wasp in this movie. And it's frustrating.
Well, from scene one where they show her, she's got the haircut, and you're like, "That's the Wasp."
Yeah,
I mean, you know, right there. You're right. You're absolutely right. If she would have come in and saved his bacon at the end, that would have been a really great way to do that. But I will say this: that fight scene that they show in the trailer on the toy train, that's just a small segment of a huge ongoing last half of the movie battle. That battle like rages on from location to location, and that's just the final scene, and it's just a great battle. But that's one thing I liked about it was that they took advantage of the superpowers of Shrinky Dink battle and you know, jumping from normal. Now the one thing Isaac had to complain about, and I to me it's like the whole, I guess they're going to maybe get into that later, but the whole, you know, there's also the Goliath side of Ant-Man.
Oh, they're totally going to get into that later.
Yeah, and he was saying that it would be nice to have that in this one where, you know, well, he can shrink. Why can't he grow?
That crossed my mind, too.
Well, yeah. So
especially because he makes other things big.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, but not himself. And that that's the elephant in the room in that movie is that you can see that everybody's been told not to mention the fact that he doesn't use growing powers, you know.
Yeah. And it's like, because you're right, that would have added on a little bit more, too. Given that Goliath punch into the yellow jacket or something, that just would have been nice. But I will say this: his sidekicks, the three amigos, I love those guys. I mean, T.I. is one of the actors playing. I mean, they've got the stereotypical Hispanic guy, the stereotypical Black guy, and the stereotypical Russian that's hacking the computers. You know, it's just like every single movie you've ever seen where they have those people, these guys embody that. And it's just, and they do it with humor too. They don't just do it like, you know, it's like, oh, well, this guy's going to hack in. It's like, I'm Russian. You might as well expect me to, you know, that type of feel. So
all we Russians are hackers. So
exactly. And so, and even the choice of language they use, it was just great. I thought those guys really made it. Again, that's one of the things with Marvel movies, is your sidekicks are just as fun as the main characters.
Yeah.
You know, like Daredevil, take that look at that series. Foggy is just as fun as Matt Murdock. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and that's the thing about these movies is I feel like it's something that they really sweat over at Marvel is that, well, A, I think that they really do sweat the scripts. And while every movie has lapses in logic that you can point at and laugh at, they completely blow past it with charm.
Right.
You know, that's Marvel's secret weapon, you know, and the elusive thing that they've really mastered. And in this movie, I felt like those guys, like, for instance, are a huge part of the charm that they are really trying to have you, you know, mm-hmm. watch this. Don't think about that.
Right. Right.
And it's not quite enough for me at this time. But again, that's just me complaining because the bar has been set so high. If I say this is in the lower third of Marvel movies for me, that's still pretty darn good. It's nowhere near the level of like Iron Man 2, for instance, you know, and it's even better than Incredible Hulk, mm-hmm. you know, which I like better than most. I don't want to rag on the movie. It's a good movie, but it's just not, it isn't as much of a, holy go, my God, how did they do it?
Right. You know, kind like of Guardians movie. Of the Galaxy was.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Are there post credit sequences? And
two
if
of
so,
them.
Comment?
Yep. There are two of them.
Okay.
One after they're both good.
One after the creative and one after the main, and the one after the main credits is, you definitely want to watch that.
It's worth staying for. It's not Howard the Duck.
Yeah. But it talks about an upcoming movie. Anyway, I will tell you this, Eric. Like I said, I went in there with I'll go see it because it's a Marvel movie. And I walked out of there saying, yeah, that rocked. I loved it. I had a good time. But
yeah, that's all I'll expect.
Now from Isaac, who, you know, has got a limited view on the Marvel world, I'm trying to slowly get him introduced in the comics. You know, he reads several of the comics, but not, you know, as much as I always did. But anyway, he came out of there saying it was better than Guardians. I didn't think so.
Wow.
He said he liked it better than Guardians. So it had an appeal to him. So I don't, again, now I will also say this. I went and saw it regular, and then I went and saw it in 3D. The 3D was fun. It was kind of neat to watch, especially when he went in Subatomic. Not too much of a spoiler, I hope. That was really cool, but it didn't make any difference in the film. The 3D just was there. Unlike Guardians, when I saw Guardians right. in 3D, Guardians was like a whole new film in 3D. And so,
yeah.
But Ant-Man in 3D, it's there.
Yeah. I'll go along with that to a point, but I actually thought the 3D contributed to a lot of enjoyment for me of the shrinking sequences. That's where I felt like it kind of earned its place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it puts you in the world of it a little more. But,
yeah.
You know, that said, it's not like Guardians of the Galaxy is hands down one of the best uses of 3D I've ever
Absolutely,
seen. And I'm,
yes.
I'm a big 3D fan. So, yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't think it added anything to it, but it was neat to watch. So, all right. Well, I think we've hammered that in the ground without giving away any spoilers. I think we might've given away one or two and Eric didn't catch on to them.
I'm fine with what I know.
Okay, good. Well, you'll enjoy it. It's a Marvel movie. How can you not?
Yeah.
Well, unless it's a Marvel made by another studio movie, then it's a different story.
Well, I just drove back from St. Louis, and they have an IMAX theater there, and I did temporarily consider going to see if Ant-Man was playing in IMAX 3D and watching that, but
that'd be kind of
fun.
Wanted
to get home. Yeah, it would be fun.
Well, what do you guys think of the Fantastic Four movie coming out? Tim Coker, especially.
yeah, I'm a Fantastic Four guy, no question. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that I'm optimistic. I think that it has a decent chance of being better than the last two. And I think I've said this on a previous episode of the podcast, but in case I haven't, when I went to see the second one, you know, this Rise of the Silver Surfer,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, sounds dirty. There's a scene where, you know, Reed Richards has a bachelor party and he does a stretchy disco dance.
Oh.
And I really did want to crawl under my chair and die at that point.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that there probably isn't going to be a movie that makes me want to end my life or maybe the life of the director, you know? It doesn't look that incompetent. So, you know,
okay.
I'm going to give it that. It doesn't look great. Like, you talked about Marvel movies not by Marvel, and, you know, I'm starting to call these things Schmarvel now, especially because of the diminishing returns of the X-Men movies for me. But I would love to see a movie where they aren't like, well, you know, this is a Fantastic Four movie and we're going to use the name and all that stuff, but we kind of want to make something different, you know, which was the MO for our entire lives until Marvel Studios said, how about we just make an Iron Man movie?
Yeah.
And we don't make a remake of The Matrix that has a guy in an Iron Man suit or whatever, you know
right.
what I mean? And I feel like with this movie, you know, it feels like kind of a weird off-brand version of Fantastic Four. But that said, I like the cast, what I know of them. I like, you know, Ben doesn't look too bad. He looks all right.
Yeah.
You know, he's we'll see how he does. But I think Jamie Bell's all right. I've been watching him recently in Turn, you know, Washington Spies, which is not the most amazing show I've ever seen. It's not terrible. It's just not kind of as good as I wanted it to be. I kind of wanted it to be Vikings for Revolutionary America, which I think is a show I really, really want to see. And it's not that. By the way, I love Vikings. Vikings is good. But, you know, I think it looks like a good cast, and I liked Chronicle. So basically, I don't see anything in the trailers that makes me go, oh no, you know. So,
well, the thing that gets me is the thing doesn't have pants in one of the trailers, and I'm like, wait
a
minute.
Yeah, I miss his trunks. I miss the trunks.
Right.
So does he have a big, like, brick appendage or something?
Exactly. So
or does he have nothing? Either way, it's going to be weird.
Is the suggestion that he's neutered by his, you know, or is he like a dog and it comes out? I don't know, you know?
You know, I think I saw this discussion in Mallrats.
but they're making us think about it because they don't get pants.
Right, exactly. That bothers me when I see that. I'm like, hey, wait. And the thing is, on the same lines, when you saw Groot with no pants, he had buttocks at one point, if you paid attention. Yeah. I wonder if Ben Grimm's going to have buttocks. I don't know. I don't know.
Was I the only one that was like... a little distracted in Watchmen with Dr. Manhattan starting around with that enormous anything that was being said. I was just like, dude, cover up.
You know, honestly, I loved that. I absolutely loved it, and I didn't want him to cover it up because that's the whole point of Dr. Manhattan. Yeah. Pants is stupid. If you're God, you don't wear pants.
That's right.
True. You know, it's true to the comic, so...
Yeah, and it's you know, I mean, I may think that Zack Snyder is an unimaginative goober, but I shouldn't say unimaginative. I just don't think he's a guy. I don't think he's very deep, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He got that right. He absolutely got it right. That in my mind, having Dr. Manhattan walk around, you know, with his gizmo in your face, unfortunately, that's Dr. Manhattan. So, you know.
Okay.
Well, one related thing I wanted to talk about, since you were talking about the non-Marvel movies. Have you guys heard about the X-Men Apocalypse, or not X-Men Apocalypse, X-Men Days of Future Past, the Rogue Cut, okay?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is a cash grab. I mean, it can't be anything other, but it's got my curiosity aroused. It's like, how can you justify doing an entire new cut of your movie just by adding one character who for some strange reason was cut out of the original cut? It's just, the whole thing just has me scratching my head, and I will hopefully get the chance to at least rent it, because I don't want to pay to buy it. But I'm curious what it looks like and why, just why.
Money. Franchise loyalty. This is what I'm saying is that they don't care about whether there's anything interesting or good in it. It's just, can we give them something else to buy because they want another X-Men movie? And, you know, I know that I'm kind of being a nerd trader by saying that, but, you know, I really, well, again, I don't like Days of Future Past. I think Days of Future Past is a pretty terrible movie, but I don't know, man. I don't think that movie is going to be improved by having a subplot about Rogue.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, it couldn't even balance the... They couldn't even satisfyingly balance the 50 plot threads it had. You know, did I tell you guys what I did with that movie recently?
No.
My niece, I've got a niece who is like completely awesome, by the way. Oh, and if you ever like are worried about not knowing what to say to a celebrity or somebody at a convention, you just have to have my niece Marissa with you, because she is amazing and they love her and take her in and be like, oh, you're awesome. You're cool. Great. And so then like you're in. But anyway, Marissa is, you know, she's really curious about a lot of things, and she wants to know, you know, because like all girls her age, she thinks Jennifer Lawrence is it, you know, and she wants to know more about Mystique, and she wanted to see, you know, see Mystique. And I was like, well, you know, there's a lot in this movie that's going to be too violent for her, because she's got a very low threshold of what she can handle.
Okay.
You should have seen how mad she was that I didn't warn her that Luke Skywalker was going to get his hand chopped off. Right. So that's all good. And what I did is I put in, I decided to show her First Class and Days of Future Past, and just basically fast forward through the stuff that didn't really involve Mystique. And I'll tell you what, that movie is better than both of those two movies put together. They should just make the movie about Mystique. She's way more interesting. I don't know. Anyway, those X-Men things, I kind of feel like, once Matthew Vaughn came into the picture, it was really a bad idea, because Matthew Vaughn, and I you guys are probably not going to agree with me, but he does not make good movies.
I know I've seen some other stuff he's done, and I think I've liked some, but I can't remember what else he's done. I just know the name is familiar for more than one movie.
Stardust?
Nope, never saw it.
Stardust is super mediocre and kind of dumb. Layer Cake, super mediocre, kind of dumb. Then, of course, he came into the X-Men franchise and made the super mediocre and kind of dumb Days of Future Past.
Well, there you go. See?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
God, I'm such a bitch. I'm sorry, you guys.
Oh, well, you know what? I think that right there should end the podcast. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. Oh, wait, I guess not. All right. So nothing else, you guys.
I think if nothing else, that we've learned one thing is that franchises are not as good as we hope that they will be, unless it's made by Marvel Studios.
Then, but some of us are still suckers and are still holding out hope, even though the odds are against us.
Exactly. Because I'm still going to go see that Star Wars movie.
Oh, hell yes.
I'm still going to go see that Superman v. Batman, whatever they're calling it nowadays, movie. I'll still go see him. Mm-hmm. I'm the sucker. But, yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, come on. Like, I'm not going to.
Exactly.
I know it's going to be.
Yeah, we can.
But then, I'll totally go, worst movie ever when it's over.
Absolutely.
So will we all. So, all right. Well, that ends the podcast. Remember, folks, you can always support the podcast by various means. Click on the Amazon banners on the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com page. You can also buy T-shirts. Great artwork created by Tim Coker. By the way, Tim, I just bought myself a messenger bag with our logo on it, and it looks so super cool. It's bigger than Isaac's backpack bag, so you know.
Yeah, he had it with him at the PopCon.
Yeah, he had the backpack.
I was very envious.
That's really cool. So the stuff looks good when it's printed. So yeah, support the podcast. Buy the T-shirts, buy the bags, everything. Also on the if you want to get involved with Loot Crate, a great way to become a nerd, get these monthly boxes. Well, basically, if you want to become a nerd. Loot Crate is awesome. They send you all these really geeky things once a month. Anyway, there's a link on the podcast page for that as well. And also, finally, NerdCon 2016, that's next year, we're raising funds to bring in Captain Marvel, you know, from the Shazam Isis Hour of the 70s. So if you want to contribute and get him to help come out, we got a GoFundMe page created. You can click on that, make a donation, and we'll get him to NerdCon 2016. And you guys better come to this one.
To meet Captain Marvel? Heck yeah.
I am so trying to get Isaac to cosplay as Captain Marvel Jr. I mean,
what about Billy Batson? Or what was his name?
Yeah, Billy Batson.
Billy Batson.
Yeah. But
no. Is he not coming?
Well,
I haven't heard about him doing conventions, actually. I wonder if he does.
I wonder. I'll have to look that up and see if he is. But that would be, you know, that would be the coolest thing. NerdCon 2016, Billy Batson and Captain Marvel together. You know,
reunion.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's all sorts of great fundraising stuff. Support the podcast on the website. So do that and tell your friends, and just pass it on. So in the meantime, that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson on Twitter.
I am Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill on Twitter.
And I'm Tim Coker. And you can reach me on those occasions when I never visit my Twitter account at Tim K. Has to Say.
And so that wraps up the Nerd Up Podcast this time around. As we always say, stay nerdy.
Nerd Up.